Hello, this is Jean with the commercial news, the weekend edition for June 21st, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article entitled Cutting Out Distractions, District 118 Students to Have Phones Locked in Magnetic Pouches by Kayla White. Students attending Danville High School and Northridge Middle School will not be able to access their phones at school starting this fall. Phones will be locked in a magnetic yonder case until the end of the school day in attempt to reduce distractions as well as curb what DHS Principal Jacob Brett says is an underground conversation happening all day without adult monitoring. District's 118 Board of Education voted Tuesday, June 17th, to approve the $69,284.75 purchase of the Yonder pouches, 1,200 pouches for DHS students and 750 pouches for Northridge students. The price includes implementation planning support, implementation meetings, process logistics planning, policy creation, and a launch plan, as well as school resource templates like school policy and parent letters, staff communication templates, and more, as outlined in the company's quote. Proposed benefits. According to the Yonder Company, the use of their pouches has had positive impacts since they were first introduced in 2014. In a study of 37,000 students utilizing their pouches, they found that student academic success rates increased up to 6.27%, and students in grades 6 through 12 overall experienced a 14.9% increase. Yonder also claims that the phone-free environment positively impacts behavior, showing a 44% decrease in an average monthly behavioral referrals. A key concern Brett expressed was the double threat of cell phone usage, not only in distracting students throughout the day when they're supposed to be in communication and share inappropriate such as altercations in school. There's an entire student conversation happening at every school in America underground that no adult knows is happening. They're having it all day long on their phones, and it is unmonitored, he said. A lot of that conversation is actually the thing that causes a lot of the behaviors that we see that frustrates us so much that have no place in our schools. Brett was referring to an ongoing issue of fights at Northridge Middle School, particularly. At an April school board meeting, parent Amy Graham McCarty spoke about how her son, a student at Northridge, was strangled by another student with a computer charger in late March, something the district did not inform her of. In response to her son's attack, McCarty sent a Freedom of Information Act FOIA request to Danville Police Department asking for records of police calls, incidents, and responses to Northridge in the last 2.5 school years. I was sent 17 pages of police calls. Every one of these responses to the school compromises our student safety, she said, listing off some of the types of calls, including harassment, threats, civil disturbance, battery, sexual assault, drug activity, a suspicious person with a weapon, psychological behavior, or suicidal tendencies, an armed person at the school, and more, she said. Concerns. Before the board voted, one parent asked the board not to approve the purchase due to concerns she had over the impacts the decision could have on students. While she acknowledged the benefits of cutting out distractions for students, she advocated for balancing that goal of practicality, safety, and respect for our students' real-world needs. If we're serious about preparing students for life beyond school, we should give them opportunities to exercise responsibilities, and that includes managing their cell phones. Delbert Jacks said, adding that students often use their phones to communicate with parents, employers, coaches, and others regarding pickup times, change in plans, and more. Jack also asked for the amendment to the policy enabling the students to use their cell phones during their lunch period, a suggestion Brett said is both impractical and against the policy of the Yonder Company. It goes against the philosophy of what we're trying to accomplish through purchasing the pouches in terms of creating a focused, phone-free environment, and then also I would be concerned about the logistical undertaking that would pose for the staff of the high school, Brett said, adding that due to the scheduling of the various lunch breaks throughout the day, sometimes there are hundreds of students entering and exiting the cafeteria at once. Brett's later said students who need to communicate with parents and others will still be able to send emails from their district email address using their district-issued Chromebooks. Board member Chris Eaton expressed a parent's concern he'd received over how well the district will be able to enforce the rules, considering the difficulties school administrators have faced in trying to enforce a dress code. Yes, because this impacts learning and teaching, whereas what kids wear, I don't believe does. And the expectations for the Yonder pouches have far fewer variables. There is no gray area in terms of whether a student has a phone or not, Brett said, adding that enforcement would be up to building administrators, not teachers. He also said he has spoken to two different schools in Illinois who said that after the initial implementation and getting through the growing pains, to see a phone either in a classroom or a hallway was extremely uncommon. Board member Kimberly Corley admitted to feeling torn about the issue. I've been to the Viking roundtables. I've listened to the staff. I've listened to the presentations about the pouches, she said. As a parent, that's very difficult for me because I do understand what Miss Jack's saying, and I do have a couple of children who are still in the district. I do think this could be a very positive thing after the initial growing pains. My concern is the cost after. After our recent discovery of the deficit for our district, this is a serious concern of mine, and just being transparent, I'm scared to spend any money in this district right now, but I don't disagree that we need it, Corley said. Corley referred to the discovery of an $18 million deficit in the school's budget, as well as the recent $817,000 settlement the district signed with former superintendent Dr. Alicia Geddes after she was placed on paid administrative leave in February of 2025 until the end of her contract in June of 2026. Easton pointed out that the funding for the pouches would come out of Title IV federal funding. Like all federal grants, we pay for it up front and wait for reimbursement, so it is going to impact us initially while we're awaiting for reimbursement, he said. Kelly Truex, Director of Educational Support Programs, explained how Title IV funding works and said the district has already received the grant for the next school year. Later, Superintendent John Hart warned those present that both state and federal funding has been cut for the next school year and may be cut further in subsequent years. So the governor just passed the budget, and in that budget there are lots of cuts, including cuts to education, and federal funds are also affected. The budget was just passed, and the U.S. Department of Education was hit as well, Hart said. So the money that we've been accustomed to, that has ended. He went on to say the evidence-based funding, which is awarded to each district per child, will drop from $307 million to $301 million statewide. He also said Champaign schools will no longer be able to offer free lunches to all students due to funding cuts. I think we're seeing what we have in store for ourselves, so it may be a tough year financially. It's not the best news, but it's our reality, Hart said. Board member Alice Payne voted in support of the pouches due to concerns she has over the excessive time students spend on their phone. If you look at the statistics, most students in high school in particular spend 2.5 hours on their cell phones while they are at school instead of focusing on academics, she said. I think we just have to trust that this is going to work. Like everything else that's new, we have to give the time to actually work. I think it will. According to a new study released by JAMA Pediatrics, 25% of adolescents spend more than two hours on their phones during school. The top five most used apps were messaging, Instagram, video streaming, audio, and email. Loopholes and safety issues. When asked why the district couldn't utilize inexpensive calculator caddies hanging in the front of the classroom to ensure students' phones were not in their hands, Brett said it would be disruptive at the start of every class period, and that the purchase of the pouches is showing the district support and the school board support for the teachers in the classroom. As to how the district plans to handle a possible uptick in other pre-smartphone methods of in-class communication, like note passing, Brett said he doesn't believe students are that desperate to communicate. Considering the prevalence and ease of purchasing a special type of magnet, a neodymium magnet that can be used to open Yonder pouches, Brett said he was assured by Yonder that these magnets don't work as easily as kids think. The company said that they don't see that to be a rampant issue with the schools that have purchased them. They assured me of that, he said. As far as how such magnets could possibly damage metal detectors, Brett said he wasn't aware of any risks. According to Dura Magnetics, a neodymium magnet can disrupt electronic equipment, and they can also be dangerous to people with pacemakers or other implanted devices, as a magnetic field could interfere with the device, causing serious effects on health and safety. These magnets can also jump toward one another, pinching skin or even breaking a finger depending on the size of the magnet. Navigational systems, hard drives, disks, and videotapes can all be impacted and even destroyed by these magnets, so much so that they are typically transported via ground. In any type of hard decision that's asking anyone to change, you can make a laundry list of hypotheticals as to how people are going to get around it. I don't believe that the prospect of people making poor decisions is a reason not to do what I believe is the right decision, Brett said. In response to Jack's suggestion that students be allowed to practice making responsible decisions for themselves and facing the consequences, Brett said it's up to adults to help protect kids from decisions that could potentially impact their lives. In another education article for District 118, the board moving in a very positive direction. Hart Parker, named Superintendent Assistant, again by Kayla White. At a recent Danville District 118 school board meeting, Interim Superintendent John Hart was promoted to the permanent position, while Marquesa Parker was named Associate Superintendent. I am committed to leading transparently, being visible and accessible, and doing what is right because it's the right thing to do, Parker said after the announcement. I look forward to refining our district systems, moving forward with strategic planning, and implementing initiatives that support the growth and success of every student here in District 118, Parker added. She also called on parents and community members to engage, share your ideas, and bring your questions and concerns to our district and building leadership teams before you take them to social media outlets. Give us the opportunity to work with you to find a solution. Hart has been serving as the interim superintendent since Dr. Alicia Geddes was placed on paid administrative leave earlier this year. I really appreciate this opportunity. I can assure you that I am up for the challenge, Hart said. This job has not been easy since I've been in it. It only gets easier by the day. Board President Darlene Halloran spoke highly of both administrators, highlighting their educational and professional credentials as well as their character. Parker is a native of Danville who graduated from DHS in 1999 before earning an associate's degree in science and art from DACC and later a bachelor's degree in elementary education with an English concentration from Eastern Illinois University. She has also earned a master's degree in curriculum and instruction from Olivet Nazarene University, as well as a master's of arts in educational administration from Eastern Illinois University. Parker began her teaching career in April 2005, teaching third and fourth grade classes at Mead Park Elementary, Mark Denham Elementary, and Liberty Elementary. She went on to serve as the assistant principal of DHS for 3 years, and later principal of Northeast Elementary Magnet School for a year. Next, she served as director of human resources for the Urbana School District for 4 years. In 2022, she began the pursuit of a doctorate degree in education with superintendent endorsement for the University of Illinois. Parker has since received that endorsement and begun work on her dissertation, which is focused on equitable leadership practices at the district level. She anticipates completing her defense in 2027. "I couldn't be more pleased that she has agreed to this appointment," Halloran said, calling Parker a tremendous asset to our district. "And she will be wonderful in that role." Hart has served District 118 for 24 years in various capacities, including teacher, principal, director, and assistant superintendent. Hart holds a master's degree in general administration and endorsement as director of special education. In 2016, he earned a superintendent's endorsement and completed an educational specialist degree in educational leadership. Throughout his career, Mr. Hart has passionately advocated for a quality, comprehensive education for all students, and he shares in the vision of the Board of Education to ensure that all District 118 students reach their full potential, Halloran said. Hart's leadership philosophy, Halloran said, centers around developing rigorous teaching and learning environments, promoting social-emotional wellness, and creating opportunities for students to discover their talents and dreams through rich academic, fine arts, athletics, and extracurricular activities. Halloran later said she hoped the two appointments would serve as signals to the community that we are moving forward, and we're moving forward in every positive direction. Okay, our final front page article is titled, "Advocates Await Action on Bill Protecting Rights of Immigrant Students in Illinois," by Peter Hancock. Immigrant rights advocates in Illinois are anxiously awaiting the governor's signature on legislation aimed at protecting K-12 students who may be in the country without legal authorization from being denied access to free public education. House Bill 3247, known as the Safe Schools for All Act, passed both chambers of the General Assembly in the final days of the spring session. It would prohibit schools from denying any child access to a free public education based on their actual or perceived immigration status or that of their parents. It would also prohibit schools from disclosing or threatening to disclose information about a student's immigration status or the status of a person associated with the child. And it would require schools to develop procedures for reviewing and authorizing requests from law enforcement agents attempting to enter a school or a school facility. The bill is intended to buffer K-12 students in Illinois from efforts by the Trump administration to launch mass deportation of non-citizens living in the United States without legal authorization. Speaking at a May 7th rally outside the State House, where Democratic lawmakers and immigration rights advocates protested an appearance in Springfield that day of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, State Senator Karina Villa, Democrat of West Chicago, the chief Senate sponsor of the bill, vowed that Illinois would remain defiant of Trump's political agenda. "We are also going to protect our children," she told the crowd gathered around a statue of Abraham Lincoln. "We're going to make them feel safe in our schools by passing HB 3247. We are going to unite, and we are going to get that done." On January 20, the first day of the new administration, the Department of Homeland Security rescinded a Biden-era policy that prevented federal agents from conducting immigration enforcement actions in certain sensitive areas, including schools, churches, and hospitals. Fred Sow, an attorney for the Illinois Coalition for Immigration and Refugee Rights, said during an interview that the policy change has had a chilling effect on the immigrant community, making many afraid to even show up in school. We have seen a decline in student participation, particularly among heavily Latino schools, after this inauguration, he said. So we want to make sure that schools are prepared in the event that federal agents, or for that matter, other law enforcement, come to their door in a non-emergency situation. Sow said advocates have also been concerned about possible changes in other legal protections for immigrant students that so far have only been expressed in judicial opinions. In 1982, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down a Texas statute that authorized local school districts to either deny enrollment to children who had not been legally admitted to the United States or to charge them tuition, holding the law violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Sow, however, said there have been attempts in other state legislatures, including earlier this year in Tennessee, to pass legislation that would challenge that 43-year-old ruling. And while the effort in the Tennessee legislature fell short this year, he said advocates in Illinois wanted to act now to make sure the rights of immigrant students are protected in state law, should the Supreme Court precedent ever be overturned. Fortunately, our counterparts in Tennessee, the immigrant advocacy organization, and community leaders bombarded the General Assembly with advocacy work and were able to persuade a number of legislators to vote against this legislation when it came down to it, he said. But you know, that's not to say that folks in Tennessee or folks in other states won't try again. As of Wednesday, June 18th, HB 3247 had not yet been sent to Governor Pritzker. Okay, we have a couple of obituaries and some death notices. The first is Loretta Sue Krause. Loretta Sue Krause, 73, of Miyaca City, Florida, passed away on Saturday, June 14th, 2025, at Serenity Gardens of Bradenton, Florida. A celebration of life will be held for Loretta at 11 o'clock a.m. on June 23, 2025, at Sunset Funeral Homes, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Illinois. Steve Benson will officiate. Entombment will follow at Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 at the funeral home. Memorials in Loretta's name may be made to the Breast Cancer Foundation at nationalbreastcancer.org or the Alzheimer's Association at donorservicesalzheimer.org. Please join Loretta's family in sharing memories, photos, and videos of her tribute. The next obituary will be Shirley Smith. Shirley Ann Smith, 91, of Euless, Texas, formerly of Danville, Illinois, passed away on June 14th, 2025, at Meadwood Assisted Living in Grapevine, Texas. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, June 24th, 2025, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, Illinois, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. David Anderson will officiate. Burial will be in Spring Hill Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Monday, June 23rd, 2025, at the funeral home. Memorials may be made in Shirley's memory to the Danville First Church of the Nazarene or Samaritan's Purse. Please join Shirley's family in sharing memories, photos, and videos of her tribute. And a few death notices. Brenda K. Crawford, 73, passed away on June 12th at IU Health Simon Cancer Center in Indianapolis. A celebration of life will be held at 1 p.m. on June 12th at Winville United Methodist Church. And we've already talked about Shirley Smith and Loretta Sue Krause. And a quick story in national news. Europeans meeting with top Iranian diplomat yields hope of more talks but no breakthrough, by Jamie Keaton. A meeting between Iran's foreign minister and top European diplomats on Friday yielded hopes of further talks, but no immediate concrete breakthrough, a week after the crisis centered on the Iranian nuclear program erupted into war between Israel and Tehran. Foreign ministers from Britain, France, and Germany, as well as the European Union's foreign policy chief, emerged from talks at a Geneva hotel about 3.5 hours after Iran's Abbas Araghchi arrived for the meeting. It was the first face-to-face meeting between Western and Iranian officials since the start of the conflict. In a joint written statement issued after the talks ended, the three European nations and the EU said that they discussed avenues towards a negotiated solution to Iran's nuclear program. They reiterated their concern about the expansion of the nuclear program, adding that it has no credible civilian purpose. The good result today is that we leave the room with the impression that the Iranian side is fundamentally ready to continue talking about all important issues, German Foreign Minister Johann Wuttepohl said, adding both sides has held very serious talks. British Foreign Secretary David Lammy said, "We are keen to continue ongoing discussions and negotiations with Iran, and we urge Iran to continue their talks with the United States." He added that, "We're clear, Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon." In a separate statement, Lammy stressed that the aim of Europe and the U.S. was that Iran should stop all uranium enrichment. He said that there can be discussion about the energy needs of Iran, but added that zero enrichment is the starting point. Lammy told British media outlets that there is a window of within 2 weeks where we can see a diplomatic solution, and urged Iran to take that off-ramp. "We must absolutely prioritize a return to full negotiations that include the nuclear program to go toward zero enrichment," said French President Emmanuel Macron earlier on Friday in an apparent alignment with the U.S. position. Enrichment has been the key point of contention in talks between the U.S. and Iran over its nuclear program. U.S. Mideast envoy Steve Witkoff at one point suggested Iran could enrich uranium at 3.67%, then later began saying Iran must stop all enrichment on its soil. That position on the American side has hardened over time. Tehran rejects giving up all uranium enrichment. "Military operations can slow Iran's nuclear program, but in no way can they eliminate it," said French Foreign Minister Jean-Noël Barrot. "We know well, after having seen what happened in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Libya, how illusory and dangerous it is to want to impose regime change from the outside." Barrot also said the European nations invited the Iranian minister to envisage negotiations with all parties, including the United States, and without waiting for the end of the strikes. The French foreign minister explained that in discussions with Iran, Foreign Minister Araghchi agreed to put all the issues on the table, including some that weren't there before, and showed his disposition to continuing the conversation that we started today, and for the Europeans to help facilitate, including with the United States. Well, it looks like that's all we're going to have time for today. This has been Jean with the commercial news of Vermilion County for the weekend edition, June 21st, 2025, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.